Out of our separate lives we come to walk this path together for an hour or a day, for a week or a month or a series of months and years. For this space of time we travel together, making much or little or nothing at all of the fact that another walks beside us. We can keep our eyes cast down, protecting ourselves from the pain we risk whenever we allow another human being to touch us, living safe little lives inside our sterile wrappings. Or we can reach out, risking a little or a lot or every coin we have, because we believe that loving and being loved is the only game in town. The choice is ours. Those who risk much lose much, but they are also the only ones who ever win. Good morning, and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. Whether you've been here hundreds of times or this is your first time walking through our doors, you are welcome here. If you'd like to know more about what it means to be a member of this fellowship, please see Shirley Holbrock after the service. We light our chalice to find inner peace, love for each other, and faith in ourselves. Also, to be welcoming to whoever we meet and kind to all living creatures. So gather around this light of hope as we share this time together. Now please rise in body or in spirit as we sing hymn number 21, For the Beauty of the Earth. I'd like to call your attention to the announcements in the order of service, and I have two additions. One, the speaker next week, Reverend James Atwood, is going to be in town on Saturday night. They're going to stay in a hotel if they can't find anybody to put them up, but if somebody would be interested in hosting the speaker and his chauffeur, please see me or Ann Cowan after the service. The other announcement is there's an error in the order of service for the Easter potluck. Easter is on April 5th, not April 19th. So please bring your food and show up on the 5th. You can bring food on the 19th, too. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. Let us take a moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like to share a brief verbal joy or sorrow from your life, please raise your hand so the microphone can be brought to you.
and March, and I have a joy. I've got some of my family here, my daughter Melissa, my daughter Marjorie, and Melissa's two kids, Lucy and Max, are here visiting, so I'm having a great spring break.
My name is Jody Hendon, and I have it's kind of a mixed blessing, I guess. My oldest son, Jonathan, he just finished the intelligence portion of his training, and he's going on to SEER. So I'm really, really happy for him that he's accomplishing so much, and I'm really, really scared for him because this is going to be kind of a intense training for him. So.
May we remember those who have spoken and be mindful of the many joys and sorrows we hold in silence in our hearts. Now will the children please come forward and join Megan Hardy for a story. Megan is a guest from the local LDS church, and her husband Nathan will be part of the main service. So, right up here. Sure. It's going to set you up the microphone and the stand over there.
Good morning, guys. Today we are going to talk about, in our church, we have missionaries. When boys and girls graduate from high school, they have the opportunity to serve a mission if they so choose. Over here, I have some pictures of missionaries. Missionaries do two things in our church. They serve the people around them, and they teach about what we believe. So missionaries go all over the world. If you choose to serve a mission in our church, you fill out your paperwork and you send it in, and then you wait. You are so excited, and you wait for your letter to come back in the mail. And when you get that letter, you open it up, and it tells you where you are going. My son Elijah is going to come over here and talk about some of these pictures. Can you come over here?
Okay.
Can you talk into the microphone? These are some missionaries that have served in our family. Can you tell who this is?
It's my aunt. My aunt's name is Stacia.
Do you know where she went on her mission?
Chicago. Yeah, that's exactly where we're moving.
Okay, and who's this?
My uncle's name is Aunt. And my grandma's
Yep, so this is Grandpa. He served in California for 2 years. And Stacia served in Chicago, our aunt. And then their uncle served in Salt Lake City, and their aunt served in New York. And I have a quick little story to share with you guys. It's called I Can Be a Missionary Too. Brett was excited. He had just gotten a letter from his big brother, Tony. Tony was a missionary. Before Tony left, Brett promised him that he would do missionary work too. Dear Brett, did you know that when you serve others, you are doing missionary work? I can't wait to hear all about the missionary work you are doing. Love, your brother Tony. Mom, I want to serve others so I can do missionary work like Tony. What can I do? I know Mrs. Hampt could use some help raking her leaves Saturday. Would that be a good way to do missionary work? Yes. Then I could write Tony and tell him all about it. Charlie? Shh. Just a sec, okay? The next Saturday, Brett sat down to write his brother Tony a letter on his mission. Dear Tony, I hope you are having as much fun as I am doing missionary work. We helped Mrs. Hampt today in her yard. She gave us a plate of cookies in return. Dad asked her if she wanted to come to church with us, and she said yes. Love, Brett. Brett folded the paper and stuck one leaf from Mrs. Hampton's yard inside the envelope. And he mailed it off to his brother, and he says, I can be a missionary too.
That's totally right.
Because he was serving others in his community. To end, my boys and I wanted to sing you a song. Can you come over here, Charlie? This is a song that we sing at our church. to teach the little children about being a missionary.
Ready? One, two, three.
Wait.
I hope they call me a missionary.
I hope they call me on a mission.
When I have grown a foot or two. I hope by then I will be ready to teach and preach and work as missionaries do. That's it. Thank you.
Ew.
Now we will accept the offering. A single thread in a tapestry, though its color brightly shine, can never see its purpose in the pattern of the grand design. And the stone that sits on the very top of the mountain's mighty face, does it think it's more important than the stones that form the base? So how can you see what your life is worth or where your value lies? You can never see through the eyes of man. You must look at your life through heaven's eyes. A lake of gold in the desert sand is less than a cool, fresh spring, and to one lost sheep, a shepherd boy is greater than the richest king. If a man loses everything he owns, has he truly lost his worth, or is it the beginning of a new and brighter birth? So how do you measure the worth of a man in wealth or strength or size? In how much he gained or how much he gave? The answer will come. The answer will come to him who tries to look at his life through heaven's eyes. And that's why we share all we have with you, though there's little to be found. When all you've got is nothing, there's a lot to go around. No life can escape being blown about by the winds of change and chance. And though you never know all the steps, you must learn to join the dance. So how do you judge what a man is worth? By what he builds or buys? You can never see with your eyes on earth. Look through heaven's eyes. Look at your life. Look at your life. Look at your life through heaven's eyes. This morning's service will be a conversation with Nathan Hardy. Nathan is a ward mission leader at a local LDS church. He and some of the missionaries will be sharing their experiences with missions and helping us consider some things we could encounter on our quest to become a beacon for the community. So with that, welcome Nathan. So, Nathan, you're a student of Amber's, my wife, Amber.
One of my best friends.
Mine, too. She wanted to be here today, but she wasn't able, so I'll fill in. So, I guess to start off, what led to you deciding to go on a mission?
Missions are, you know, it's a big part of our church culture. So, as kids, like my wife, you know, she was singing that song with the boys. That's a song we sing in primary. We kind of grew up with this idea of, I'm going to be a missionary someday, or I should want to be a missionary. And when I was a kid, we would often have missionaries over for dinner and talk with the missionaries, and they would talk with our family about what they're doing and who they're teaching and who they're working with. And it was just, I kind of always saw these missionaries as just wonderful and great, and I wanted to be like them. My dad served a mission. He served in Argentina. I had two older brothers who served in Brazil. And so I kind of, you know, always had this idea that I would serve a mission. But as I got older, when I was like a teenager, you start to question your beliefs. Is this really what I believe? Is this really what I want to do? And I always had a pretty strong belief in my faith, but I wanted to. We're actually encouraged in our church to know for yourself if this is what you really believe and if this is what you believe to be true, because you're going out to talk to people about your beliefs and to share that truth that you hold, and you have to believe it in a way to really be able to be sincere and genuine.
Amber was telling me a little bit that the foundation of your church was kind of questioning the prevailing authority at the time. Is that right?
Yeah. So our, you know, in our history, Joseph Smith was the founder of our faith, and his kind of quest for truth began in a small community where there were multiple different religions, and all of them said that you have to join our church to be saved. And or be baptized into our church. And so he was kind of struck with this question of, well, how do I know which church is true and which church I should join? And so that kind of led to his quest for truth, which ultimately led to some of the revelations he received. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, for us.
That you're supposed to question some.
Yeah, exactly. And because of that, you know, for all of us as young members, we're encouraged to find out for ourselves. You know, discover the truth for yourself. And so that's kind of where I thought, well, I do need to figure this out for myself. And so I began to study some of our scriptures. We read the Bible and the Book of Mormon. And I began to study those and try to figure out if this was something I really believed and wanted to share with other people, mm-hmm. if I thought it was valuable.
Right.
I can keep going on that question because there's more to it. But,
sure, go for it.
So as I became a young adult, so about 18, I was getting ready to serve when I would be 19. And so that's the time where I really kind of got serious about it and started really praying and thinking about this. And it was also a time of struggle and kind of self-doubt for me a lot. I didn't know. At that time, I felt like I knew that the church was a good thing and that this is something I wanted to share with people. Mm-hmm. It had brought a lot into my life, a lot of answers to questions, and helped me through some of my personal struggles, yet I was still struggling. And a lot of that was a self-doubt that I had about whether I could be a good missionary, whether I was good enough to really help people understand our faith and help bring people more happiness in their lives. I didn't know if I could do that, partly because I was struggling with my own depression and didn't know why I wasn't happy. And that kind of played out in my mission.
Okay,
so, yeah.
So how did you get ready? How did you prepare for a mission?
So, that, you know, we're encouraged to do a few things. One is be financially ready. So we pay for our missions either through our own work and money or through our parents' support. There are also, you know, young adults who are in more disadvantaged kind of situations, and the church will provide for them to be able to serve a mission. Okay. But we're supposed to do all that we can to provide for our mission. Mm-hmm. So I worked for about a year after I graduated, and my parents also provided the rest of what I had earned, you know, mm-hmm. to match what we needed.
Okay.
To be able to serve my mission.
Okay.
So that's one way. There's also the spiritual preparation of kind of figuring this out for myself, which I talked about. And also just as a missionary, you're going to be out talking with people. And so there's a social preparation. There's the importance of being out with people and getting to know people. And that was maybe something I was good at doing that at church, mm-hmm. but I didn't know. I grew up in Utah, and most of the people I knew were members of the LDS faith. And so I didn't have a lot of opportunity to talk with people outside my faith. So that was maybe one way I wasn't as prepared.
So it sounds like it was mostly self-directed. Is there a formal component that the church has for, like, missionary boot camp or anything like that?
That's a good question. So there's a couple. There's some youth programs in the church. And, like, there's a young women's program and a young men's program. And these programs do have a component of kind of spiritual, physical preparation that's involved. Mm-hmm. But not everyone, we know that not everyone's going to serve a mission. Not everyone's going to be able to. So it's not just for the mission, specifically, per se. But before you actually, before, like, I served in Uruguay, Montevideo. And before we actually go out, we go to a missionary training center for a couple months to learn the language and to learn about how do you work with people, how do you talk with people about the faith and things like that.
Okay.
So that's something I did, yeah.
Okay. What was your experience like as a missionary?
It was hard. It was very hard for a few reasons. One is the, so learning the language. I had never learned Spanish. I took a couple classes in high school that I basically faked my way through. And I did not know how to speak that language. And I really struggled in the training center to know how to talk in Spanish. And a lot of my you know, fellow missionaries were learning a lot faster than I was. So I went out there, and all of a sudden, it's me and a companion who is from the United States, thank goodness. And so I could speak in English with him. But beyond him, everyone else spoke Spanish. And so, and I didn't know how to speak it. So it was kind of this thrust into this kind of new world, and I have to learn to talk to people and learn to understand what they're saying. So that was a big challenge for me. And I got discouraged a lot trying to figure out the language. Another big challenge of being a missionary was, like I was saying earlier, knowing if I was good enough to even do it. And I wrestled with that a lot. I'll maybe talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But another one is when we go out on missions, so there's different kinds of missions. And the main one that we serve is a proselyting mission. So this is where we go out and we talk with people. We talk with people in the street. We knock on doors and we try to find people that we can just talk with and share our beliefs with. And there's also service missions that some people serve. We also have senior couples who serve missions, doing service or proselyting or whatever. And so I was in a proselyting mission, and I'm going out talking to people in the street in the sloppy Spanish that I know. And it was just kind of, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to you. And, you know, lots of rejection.
Yeah.
And
prepared you for being a PhD student, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was good. It was a good life experience. As a young man, you know, I looked at the missionaries as just kind of always happy and just filled with kind of light and joy and going out and serving and loving the people. And I went out there and I was being rejected by these people I'm supposed to love. Mm-hmm. And serve and teach, and it was hard. I got down on myself. I did, and there were days that it's just I wanted to just my head wanted to hit the floor, and I just we walked a lot in my mission, and so I didn't have a car. There were a couple areas where I did have a bike, and that was nice. But mostly I was walking everywhere. My shoes at the end of my mission were just totally torn apart. But I was walking around talking with people all the time, and it was hard to be rejected so much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the same time, we don't want to force our beliefs on anyone. I didn't want to. And so it was also kind of how do you try to reach out and talk with people but also respect their decision to not want to hear what you have to say? Mm-hmm. And that's something that I feel like I really grew into as a missionary that was very valuable for me, that I could own my own beliefs and be ready and willing to share those with whoever I could, while at the same time understanding and respecting that other people had their beliefs. And that's something that I continue to, that's still a journey for me to know, to see that difference, that I am me, you are you, and we're all in this life together. We all share something, but we also are different, and I can respect that. Mm-hmm. And that was a very valuable lesson that I learned through that difficulty in my mission. Because, you know, coming out of everyone shares the same beliefs to no one shares my beliefs. Mm-hmm. Everyone sees me as kind of this
quite the stark contrast,
different
huh?
person, yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, people look at you, at least it was this way in Uruguay, people look at you and kind of walk away or you'd knock on the door, you hear people inside, and then they'd kind of, you know, it'd get quiet.
My wife said that when she was growing up, she lived on a rural street. It was like it was a neighborhood, but every house had like 10 acres.
Yeah.
And whenever a Jehovah's Witness was coming through, they had a telephone tree, and they would call all the other houses to tell them to turn out the lights so they didn't have to talk. That's how scared people can be of talking to missionaries.
Yeah, so on one hand, it's like, oh, but we have something so great, we just want to share it. On the other hand, it's like, well, you know, I can understand where some of that fear comes from, and or some of the, I just don't want you to kind of convince me that you're right and I'm wrong. You know, I've got my beliefs, and I don't want you to try to change them. Mm-hmm. So we understand that, and I understood it. So I try to be respectful of that, but at the same time, sometimes it's frustrating because that's why you're there.
Right.
You know? So, yeah.
So it sounds like you kind of had a perfect storm of mismatch between what you thought the experience of a missionary would be and mm-hmm. what yours was, combined mm-hmm. with self-doubt and some depression. Mm-hmm. So how did you work through the tough times in your mission?
I prayed a lot. And I talked with my mission president about it.
What's a mission president?
A mission president is someone who's called to kind of be over a mission. So there's a specific mission. In Uruguay, we have two separate missions. And
okay.
A mission comprises of a group of missionaries. So it can be like 100 to 200. I don't know how many are in our mission here. Okay, so 250 missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
So a mission president kind of watches over them, interviews them, makes sure that they're doing okay. A lot of missionaries are going to have health challenges, emotional challenges, and just challenges with the work, mm-hmm. questions about how to do it right. And so the mission president's there to provide training, guidance, and counsel. And so I would, every like 6 weeks, I'd have an interview with him. Oh, and this is funny. We would always be able to write a letter, and then he would give a little response back.
Okay.
Every week. And so his response was always the same. Keep enduring. Keep enduring. You know? 'Cause I'd be like, this is hard. I don't know if I'm, I don't know if I'm doing this right. And it was always just keep enduring, And it was frustrating at the time, but I'm grateful for his response at the same time, looking back. Because it's also a growing up experience. And so part of it is learning to stick with it, even though it's hard. I also had some interviews with him, and one time, he—I don't know if he was getting impatient with me, but he's just like, "Well, Elder Hardy," because we go by Elder when we're a missionary. "Elder Hardy, what do you want?" And at the time, I'd just been really sad; just didn't feel like I was doing a good job, and I was just like, "I just want peace. Just want peace." And a lot of that was because I just didn't feel peaceful about myself.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like to share this gospel of happiness, I had to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't. And that was hard because I believed in it. I believed it was true. But I, for whatever reason, I wasn't happy with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him I just wanted peace. And he said, "Elder Hardy, if you just lose yourself in this work, do your very best, I promise you that the peace will come." That's what he told me. And so I was like, oh. Fine. And it did. For me, it did. I think part of the challenge of being a missionary is feeling confident in being able to do it. And I grew into that over time. And it became almost second nature to me to be a missionary. It was who I had become. I felt like I had become a missionary.
Mm-hmm.
This was who I was. I felt no fear in just going out and talking with people. Whereas I take that back. I probably was scared my whole mission to talk with people.
Mm-hmm.
Always a little nervous. But it became second nature to me to do that, regardless of how the social anxiety I had of doing that.
Right.
And I just came to enjoy it. I would wake up in the morning, and I'd be excited for the rhythm of the day, for the rhythm of the work, and just going out and looking for opportunities to serve or help others and talk with people and just be out with people. That was the best part. My favorite part of being a missionary was walking outside. It was my least favorite part at the beginning, but my favorite part as the mission went on was going outside and just talking with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just felt like I was a part of their community, even though they still saw me different.
Mm-hmm.
And weird. And I'll share another story.
Sure.
I have a few, but so there. Another thing about being a missionary in another country is that you're an American, and at least I was an American,
mm-hmm.
and some of my companions weren't, but I was an American, and at the time that I served, it was 2004 to 2006, and this had just been after kind of 9-11, 9/11, and a lot of people have very negative opinions about President Bush and the war in Iraq and, or was it Iraq? I don't remember, but about the war on terrorism. And so I was seen as an American. And for a lot of people, that was a very negative thing. And one day we went to a lady's house. We were actually just knocking on doors. And she opened the door, and she just started reeling into us, just tearing us down, and just said, "I hate Americans, you're horrible, baby killers." And it was hard to hear someone speak so harshly, not against my faith, but against my nationality.
Which is still a part of your identity.
And it was, you know? And so, again, it was like, it was a identity kind of issue where, you know, am I okay with who I am, you know, even though other people hate me for it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
I went home feeling very sick, you know, emotionally just, it was hard.
Yep, that sounds hard. So you said you had one or more companions. Do you have a companion at any given time?
Yeah, so we have... So what happens is you are always with a companion. So you can see the missionaries over here. There's two sisters, two elders. And by the way, thank you guys for coming. I wanted them to come also just to be part of this conversation. You always have a companion with you. And you're actually like never supposed to leave your companion, except when you go to the bathroom, of course. So there's always that feeling of you're never, ever, ever, ever alone.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is for your own protection, your own safety. A lot of missions can be dangerous sometimes. It's nice to have a companion because you are never alone. But at the same time, that can also be hard because you never have your personal space. So you always have a companion, but you don't have the same companion throughout your mission. You can switch. The mission president decides how companionships get chosen. So you don't, like in marriage, you get to choose who you marry. But in a mission, you don't choose who you live with, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be hard because there's personality differences. But at the same time, you know, I think that experience of living with different kinds of people prepared me in a way for marriage because marriage isn't easy either. And when you marry someone, it's not like you just marry all their good parts. You marry the whole package, and you have to learn to live with people who are different from you, who trigger you, and that happens on a mission with your companion. You get triggered, your companion can frustrate you, you think you should do it this way, they think you should do it that way, and there's disagreement, and like any human relationship, you have to work through that. So that's a unique experience as a missionary, is the companionship experience, but we're also taught that... The best way that we can be missionaries is to love one another. We sing a song called Love One Another. And it says, "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one towards another." And we're taught that you, first and foremost, should love your companion. And that's really hard sometimes. But it was very good, because I had a companion I just did not like. And I talked to my mission president about it. I can't seem to like this guy. And he worked with me on that, you know, and helped me see. And I tried to find a way to see that, well, at least we're working towards the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
We're working for the same thing. And that is good. That's a unique part of being, in a mission as an LDS missionary.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Wow. So you went on your mission, you came back. Now you're a ward mission leader.
Yeah.
So you work with the missionaries that are assigned to this area, is that right?
Right. So, okay.
How did your own experience on a mission influence how you now work with other missionaries?
Yeah. So first of all, when I was a missionary, it was hard, you know, but I felt like I got the handle of it. And before I went home, I told myself, I will always be a missionary. This is who I am. I'll always be a missionary. And I knew that. I knew that I had I had figured it out for myself, how to be a missionary. And yet, I knew I hadn't totally arrived. There were still ways to learn how to be in community with other people and have and share my beliefs. So one of the things I did, first of all, was I applied to work at the Missionary Training Center. And I had always had this thought that I might be a good influence on other missionaries. And so I was excited about this opportunity to work at the Missionary Training Center and talk to missionaries about the mission experience. Mm-hmm. And kind of maybe help them understand the realities of a mission, and also how to work through emotional challenges, as I had worked through. And so I worked at the Missionary Training Center for 2 years.
It's like beginning to see that you're becoming a therapist, huh?
It was, actually. Yeah. It was. And so there were some missionaries who struggled with emotional challenges, and as a teacher there, I would often talk with missionaries. One of the things that I did, I would sit down with them and talk with them about their goals in the training center, and their progress, and I would check in with them about how they're reaching their goals. And, you know, in some of those meetings, there would be issues. There would be, I just don't feel like I can do this kind of conversations. And, of course, you know, me having conquered it all, you know, I had a lot of empathy mm-hmm. for them and where they were, but also a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I could just really say, you can do this. And it is going to be hard, but you can do this. And you're going to be fine. It's going to be hard, but you're going to grow from this. And I think that was one of the biggest things I took from my mission, was not just seeing other people change, which was great. It was awesome to be able to have those moments where I could bring something to someone's life that brought them a lot of happiness. But beyond that, it was also my own change and my own growth and working through my own self-doubt. And seeing my own value. That song I sang, or that song you read,
yeah.
I picked that song because when I was a missionary, I watched this movie, Prince of Egypt, and on one of our preparation days that we get off to kind of do basic things, well, we watched this movie, and I loved that song, Look at Your Life Through Heaven's Eyes. And so I had this kind of... I had often repeated that song in my mind that I need to see myself not as I see myself now, but as maybe God sees me. And that really helped me. And I felt that way about missionaries coming off my mission, that because I saw myself different, I saw them differently. And I had a lot of hope for them more than they had for themselves a lot of times. There are some missionaries who didn't struggle with that. A lot of missionaries don't. A lot of missionaries are very confident and never really have a lot of those self-doubt things. But some missionaries do, and that I felt like I had always been able to be there for them in the training center. And then I received this assignment here in Manhattan to be a ward mission leader. And ward is kind of the word we use for congregation. I'm the mission leader in our congregation. So kind of my responsibility is to coordinate the efforts of the missionaries with also the members of our ward, and to work with the missionaries and make sure that they're finding people to teach and helping them out in that effort. One missionary here was really struggling with depression. It was funny because I just walked by her one day, and I was asking the missionaries how they were doing, and she seemed a little down. So I said, "Are you happy? Are you okay?" And she's like, "How can you tell?" And so I was like, "Well, we can talk about it, you know, what's going on?" And so she opened up about some of her struggles as a missionary and some of the depression that she'd been dealing with. And, you know, I could relate to that, and I talked with her through some of that. And ultimately, she decided it was too much for her to be a missionary. Mm-hmm. And so she decided to go home, and that happens. A lot of missionaries who struggle with mental illness or physical disability have to go home. And there's nothing, you know, in our mind, there's nothing dishonorable about that. Mm-hmm. And so it's also been neat to be in a role where I can work more closely with missionaries because of my own experience, I feel like I'm able to help them when they're struggling, but also just help them with the work too. I know how challenging it can be, and I know how hard it can be to teach, and know how to teach well, and so I like to get in there with the missionaries and go out with them, mm-hmm. and participate in the teaching and work through some of the challenges that come up when some of our investigators who are interested in learning more about the church have questions or aren't sure about certain things, and so we can talk through those things. And I love going out with the missionaries and mm-hmm. being part of that. It's also a way for me to keep myself active as a missionary and not just get stagnant with life, but also know that it's important for me to continually try to share my beliefs with other people. Mm-hmm. And knowing working with the missionaries a lot keeps that at the front and the forefront of my mind. Mm-hmm. So
you said that at the end of your mission, you knew you'd always be a missionary, and now you again have this formal role.
Yeah.
But we've talked before about also how you try to be a member missionary. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean, and what does that role look like? How is it different?
Yeah, so in our church, we believe that when you're baptized, you make a promise that you'll... So we're Christians, so we make a promise that we'll stand as a witness of Jesus Christ. And so part of that for us is living a Christ-like life and also sharing with other people our beliefs. So we don't believe that just having the name tag and being called out on a full-time mission is the only time you're a missionary. Mm-hmm. We all have the responsibility to be a missionary or the opportunity. And it's hard, though, to know how to do it as a member, as a member of the church, not just as a full-time missionary. I think it's a little more comfortable because, well, you wear the name tag, and, that's what you're supposed to do, and everyone, expects that. And so you go out, and you just start talking with people. And, well, that's why we're here. We're here to be a missionary. But do you just go out and start talking with people when you don't have a name tag? And you just, that could rub people weird. Or, it's just, how do you do this? And how do you be a missionary but be a member? And that has been probably the biggest challenge for me. And, I said I'll always be a missionary. But coming home, I didn't know how to do it right, And that's something I'm still working on, but I've also worked really hard to kind of figure it out. And I talked a little bit about this earlier, but kind of that idea of I have my beliefs and you have yours, and is something that really helps me. It's almost like a mantra that I need to do this in a way where I don't impose my beliefs on other people, but my beliefs are who I am. And if I just edit that part of myself out of, my life when I'm around other people, I'm not being genuine and sincere in who I am. And I think for me that idea that I need to be me around other people and not be afraid has really helped. So, I said earlier we're Christians, but we believe we're Christians. A lot of people believe we're not Christians. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard to be in a community, a very, predominantly Christian community here, and feel not part of the group. Mm-hmm. I had a pretty, in the program, Marriage Family Therapy program, a pretty strong Christian group, but I never felt like they wanted me part of it because I wasn't Christian in their mind. Mm-hmm. Because we see it a little differently. And for me, that was really hard because, again, I was being seen as what I thought was incorrectly. And I had to learn to be okay with me, that this is who I am. I'm happy with who I am. I want to be who I am around other people. I don't want to hide this. Mm-hmm. I want to let my faith show because if I hide it, then, I'm not being me. And so I really worked hard to be okay to talk about how my faith affects my life. Mm-hmm. I remember giving a presentation in school about what I believe works in therapy. And the question came up, people knew that my faith kind of guided some of my beliefs about what works and what doesn't work in therapy. Mm-hmm. And so the question came up, how do you go about that, but not use your religion? And so I had opportunities to talk about this, that, well, I believe in these principles, and I believe they're true, and they are influenced by my religion. I can't deny that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I also see that they are consistent with the research, and I've seen you guys use them in therapy, you know, and they help people. Mm-hmm. And to talk about how I feel like my faith helps me be a better therapist. And so I've had opportunities to talk about my faith in normal, natural ways, because it's a part of me. But I feel sometimes at work, there's like this taboo that you can't talk about religion. It's like politically incorrect, or that religion's not allowed to be talked about for some reason. And it's not, it's like an unspoken rule. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of tried to change the culture on that, because I have a friend, he's non-religious, and I think he's not really sure about kind of his beliefs. But what he told me is, he said, well, Nathan, your religion is who you are. Like, you shouldn't just hide it.
Right,
you know?
At least a big part.
Yeah. It's a part of who I am. And, he being a non-religious person, I guess that spoke to me, because it mattered to him that I am open about it, you know, and not just hiding. Hiding some of those things. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. Do you have more questions about that?
No, I think that's pretty good. We're at a good time that I think I'd like to invite some of the other missionaries that are here to come join us and have a question for you guys to speak a little bit about what the conversation you just heard. So let's pull some chairs up and get you guys up here. Thank you. Let's see. Nathan, you can stay up here. Let's get five, and I'll just stand over by the podium. Perfect. Have a seat.
Hold it close so they, because they're also recording it.
So, what was salient, what stood out to you guys about the conversation that we just had? No pressure, yeah. Ready, you go.
I can go. One thing that really stood out to me was the whole companion aspect of it, because for our mission, I've had good companions and some not-so-good companions, and like the one the sister was talking about who just recently went home, I was her companion, and she was a good missionary, but for me it was hard because I didn't know how to help her. And just kind of trying to, I love my companions, but trying to help them in the way that I know how has been a struggle for me, especially on my mission.
For me, the conversation of really having struggles and trials. I know that throughout my mission, I've had a lot of trials with companions and with the people that we come in contact with. I've had my fair share of people slamming their doors in our face and a lot of different things like that. But also, the question that always came to mind is, why are you here? Like, how can you have any kind of positive reaction to any of this when all day no one wants to talk to you? You know, and And to me, it's having the comfort of knowing that I am fulfilling my purpose. And my purpose is to help people, to help others to help them to believe. And that to me is more important, and I've learned a lot through that and a lot of compassion towards other people. Where before my mission, I didn't really like people at all. I was just like really shy around people. I was just like, well, you stay in your space and I'll stay in mine, and I think we're good, you know? But a mission has taught me a lot about love and what love really means, to love another person and to really care about them.
If you guys don't have any other pressing thoughts that you want to get out, I'd like to open the floor up to discussion. If you have a comment or question that you'd like to make or address to somebody on stage, please raise your hand and somebody will bring the microphone. And they have it up here.
excuse me. Hi. Sorry there. Addressing my question to to the first speaker there. Suppose that I don't reject you when you make your first overture. What do you do next?
So the question is, if someone doesn't reject and is interested, what do I do next? So what we do is, you know, we set up an appointment with somebody to meet with them in their home and talk with them about, or we can meet with them in the church or wherever's most comfortable, and talk with them about our beliefs. And we start by, you know, trying to find common ground on just basic beliefs about God. And, you know, for some people we work with, they're atheists, and so they don't have a belief in God. But we share some basic human principles, such as compassion towards, you know, other people, and mutual respect, things like that. So we build upon those. And then we begin to share some of our basic beliefs about God, what we believe about him. Like I said, we're Christians, so we share our beliefs about Jesus Christ. We talk about the family. We believe pretty strongly in family relationships. And we talk about how our faith blesses families. And then we talk about prophets. We believe in prophets and how we believe that there's a prophet today. So we share some of our basic beliefs about our religion, and then we invite people to find out for themselves if it's true or not. We're pretty clear, you know, this is what we believe, and but we believe every person needs to find out the truth for themselves. And so we give them the opportunity to read our literature, our book, the Book of Mormon, and to pray about it, experiment with it, see if it produces, you know, good things in their life, and if it's, you know, quote unquote true. And so that's the invitation that we give, and we work with people through that process. Yeah.
I'm not struck by the notion that you begin by making an appointment. You don't just talk.
So sometimes, I mean, if it's a first, you know, encounter, and I would say we don't just say, hey, we're missionaries, would you like to hear what we have to say? Sometimes we just kind of start telling people. So we're missionaries of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we have a message that that is very wonderful to us. And this message is da-da-da-da-da. And so we just go into it and start talking with people. And if they're not interested, you know, we'll let them go, you know. But if they want to continue to listen to our message, then so we give them a brief kind of synopsis in a way. Does that make sense? And then we set up an appointment if they want to hear further. Yeah.
My daughter had the opportunity to serve in the Peace Corps in Guatemala, which she was in a village by herself, as most Peace Corps volunteers are, which is different than what you all do. Mm-hmm. A Peace Corps works one-on-one generally. She said there were was a group of missionaries from the Latter-day Saints there in the same village she was in. By and large, she said, however, there wasn't much cooperation. She said she tried to reach out, but there didn't seem to be any commonality of either interest or strategy or tactics. I'm wondering, you know, if any of you have had that experience of dealing with Peace Corps volunteers. I mean, they have their own goals and they work in many of the same places. Mm-hmm. But why, you know, why not work together?
Yeah, so I don't know the specific situation, but it may have something to do with the fact that some missionaries are called with a specific purpose to preach the gospel, whereas other missionaries are out to serve and be more involved in that kind of that kind of mission. And so it could depend on, you know, what their purpose is in being out there. Not to say that these missionaries who are proselyting missionaries don't go out and serve. They do, and they look for opportunities to serve. But it's not their they're not just service missionaries. Does that make sense? So yeah, I'm not sure what the situation there was, but yeah.
My question regards, I guess, how you go about your talking with people, from how you say, from what you basically went about, well, hi, I've got something to tell you about Church of LDS. It seems like a very interfaith way to go about it. I mean, all of you are going to, or have been, or on different missions to other cultures and things like that. Did you use your missionary time to learn anything about the indigenous religions of the places that you went, to draw any kind of comparisons, to make any kind of interfaith bridges between your faith and other people's? Mm-hmm. Simply because, yes, you may have your own faith, but people have theirs. Mm-hmm. And by being able to understand where you both have similarities, it may help you in your mission work, you know?
Yeah.
To be able to say, oh, well, you have this particular belief. Tell me about your beliefs. Oh, okay. Well, you believe in this and this and this. This is what I believe in. See how they're similar. Have you ever run across mm-hmm. that, or have you ever done that in your missions? That's what I'm curious about.
Do you guys want to answer this, any of you? Come up to the microphone.
I come across this all the time. And when I talk to people, I treat them as I would want to be treated. And how I would like to be treated is voice what I believe. Just how anybody else would want to express how they believe, because what they believe is essentially who they want to be. And when I talk to people, the question that I usually ask is, what number one thing matters to you the most in life? And some people might say, well, family, well, my career, the work. And I said, does that bring you much joy in life? And the message that we share, you know, brings an amount of joy to our lives as well. And how we can share a little bit more about that to you. And, you know, for me, I love, you know, I didn't usually like people at first. And then when I really started to get into it, I finally realized that we're surrounded by good people. We just don't know it yet. And, you know, in having those questions, you know, what matters to you most? What do you do to have those, you know, what makes you happy? What do you do about that? That is something that I look forward to in all people, in sharing what they believe and what makes them happy the most. And that's how, you know, our gospel, you know, the gospel that we share helps them to increase that, you know, to find that common belief in those common grounds. So.
Something
Something that I would also add too is, you know, as missionaries, we're also learning how to do this. We're not perfect. And I mean, missionaries go out at 18 now. At least the men do, and the women at 19. And so in many ways, we're still young, and we're being asked to go out and build these bridges with people and start talking about faith. And that's a learning experience for us too, to know how to do that right. And this is a, you know, we're not like pre-programmed to know how to do all this. And we're also human, and we're struggling. And we want to do this, but how to do it, we don't always know how. And so we're also working to figure it out. And there's a lot of conversation that I think goes on about how do we build these bridges with people and ask them about their beliefs. And so I think, you know, Elder Simmons, right, did a great job. I have so many missionaries come through, I forget their names. But I think that we do try to do that. So does that answer your question? Okay, well, if you have more questions, we can talk after.
Well, thank you very much for speaking to us today. I'm a foreign language teacher, and I know that the state of Utah is a leading state when it comes to foreign language learning, and that, I guess, has to do with your missions. They have so many immersion schools there. I think they have 34 schools that teach only Spanish. They have about 20 schools where they teach in Chinese and French. And so you must have had a real difficult experience because your language skills were not where they needed to be. I think that made your mission much, much harder than it maybe is for other students who go through this experience. So thank you for speaking.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hi, thanks again for sharing. I can imagine myself at 18, and I wouldn't have been up to the emotional and spiritual and physical challenge. Whether to take that on, I doubt if I would. I'm curious if I were a different color and spoke a different language than I do and came to your door, would that door be opened or closed? And what would you say, and what would your thinking be on my coming to your door as a missionary for who I was?
Mm-hmm. I can speak for myself on that. I would love anyone to come to my door to share their beliefs with me. That's just how I feel. And part of that is, you know, I love the conversations, and I love the dialogue. And I really believe we should be able to talk openly with people and share who we are and ask who others are. And so I would love it if anyone came to my door who wanted to talk about their beliefs and religion or whatever it is. Does that answer your question? And I can't speak for everyone. I can only speak for myself. But that's how I feel. And I think what, you know, Elder Simmons was saying was that, you know, he wants to give others what he would want, which is to be heard about, to be able to express himself and to be heard. And I would want to do that for others as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you for coming. This just proves that each of us is our own best representative for whatever point of view or belief that we have when we come and talk amongst others. I grew up here in Kansas, in Kansas schools throughout, and in a Protestant household. And when I took my first job and left Kansas for the first time, I went to Utah. And I said, well, gee, maybe I'm a missionary to this foreign culture in Utah, tongue in cheek, of course. But when we knew we were going, why, we began talking with many missionaries, young men just like yourselves, and invited them back and talked at great length. And we thought we were pretty smart. And there's always a gotcha, you know, that when you're talking about to a person of another faith, well, that has to be pretty crazy. How could you possibly believe that? Because we become so embedded in our own point of view that we can't believe that anybody else has a different view of things. Mm-hmm. And certainly over a lifetime, one learns that there's nothing unusual about whether someone is LDS or Muslim or Christian or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're all pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. So I was thrust into a foreign culture in Utah, and it was quite an experience, but it was a great learning experience. And it was there that I first became involved with the Unitarians, because it was a time of great turmoil, the Vietnam War, and I was flunking my students, young men of 18 who came to school waiting to go on a mission. And so I'd fail them, and they'd be drafted immediately. And a few months later, you'd see their names in the papers dead. And anyway, that's just a learning experience for me. Many years later, I was thrust into another foreign culture in Brazil, and had problems essentially like yours, going in to teach at a large federal university, lacking the language and the culture. And the reactions to me were extreme. We hate Americans because you're all bad people. You're trying to take us over. But later on, they said, well, we hate Americans, but we like you but because you're okay. Well, it's because of the way I represented myself and within their culture that became the case. And certainly that's how it all boils down, is that we are our own representatives of whatever we believe.
Thank you.
Thank you to all of you for taking the time on your Sunday morning to come out here and share this with us. We appreciate hearing about other people's beliefs. So this has been really great. Thank you very much. Now please join us for our closing song, number 148, Let Freedom Span Both East and West. You guys can get off the stage if you want. We all have two religions, the religion we talk about and the religion we live. It is our task to make the difference between the two as small as possible. Everyone is welcome to join us in the Narthex for coffee and conversation. Thanks.